Blog Talk Radio.
Hungry, probably not a good sign. That's all right. I'm happy that it's Friday. Looking forward to the weekend here. But I'm also looking forward to this wonderful show I have coming up. We're all over the map today. Somehow, some way, I managed to squeeze two sex stories into the show, actually towards the end here. But don't worry, there's actually value in discussing these things. I'm not trying to get cheap clicks, trust me. Although it may appear like it, because one of them involves horse sex. Yes, horse sex. I hope that didn't get you hard, if you're listening right now. If it did, you have some issues you got to deal with. But anyway, give you a quick rundown of what you have to look forward to. We got Ben Carson. I'm going to... the second story I think I'll do is Ben Carson, and he threw, like, a tantrum during an interview. Like, apparently he forgot that he's running for president, and you have to, even if you don't like the questions that are being asked, you have to, like, you know, roll with it. Roll with the punches. Be smooth. And I think of the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that clip was Obama. Because Obama, for all of his faults and all of his flaws, and he has many, he's fantastic when it comes to rolling with the punches in interviews and stuff. Like, he's slippery, man. He just finds a way, even if it's some douchebag right-winger interviewing him. He's like, "Oop, you couldn't catch me." Like the greased-up deaf guy on Family Guy. "You're never going to catch me. You want to go do something else." Only, like, 8 of you knew what I was talking about there, and the rest of you were like, "What the fuck?" We got Noam Chomsky in the show today. We have, he gave an interview to WorldNet Daily, and he made an interesting point about the drone program. I want to bring that up and discuss that with you guys. Also, later on, we got Glenn Beck, who is continuing to try and find guests who are somehow dumber than him. He succeeded. Right Wing Watch has a great video where a very conservative rabbi is talking about women's vaginas and periods. Fun. Whenever I want, like, you know, a real expert understanding of a woman's anatomy, I like to go to rabbis. That's who I go to. Speaking of rabbis, we have a story later about the ceremony where they cut off the tips of the baby dicks and suck off the tips. Yeah, that's in the show also today. There's new debate about that in New York City as to whether or not that's a good thing, that we allow sucking of bloody baby dicks. I'll let that, rest in your mind there a little bit. And, that's it. What, you want me to give you one more tease? Okay, I'll give you one more tease. A California assemblywoman knows exactly what it led to the California drought. And the answer is God is angry, of course. And you'll figure out what exactly God is angry at later on in the show. So what is it? Is it the gays? Are we blaming the gays today? Or what is it, abortion? Huh? We'll discuss that later. So anyway, let's get started here. And actually... before I get into, I'll do the Ben Carson story in a second, but somewhat breaking news here as I'm coming on air. This news probably broke like an hour and a half ago or 2 hours ago. I didn't have time to do a formal story for you guys, but I'll just give you some rough details right up front here. We have some news on the TPP, and more specifically the Fast Track Authority for the TPP. It has been defeated. What? Look, I have to admit, I was surprised. I'm sure many people were surprised. But then I remember there was a story that we did not too long ago where the same thing happened, where you had the TPP come up and Fast Track Authority come up, and it didn't get by once before. It also didn't get by today. But what's really telling is just how crushing of a defeat it was. The vote was 302 to 126 in the House. And the House said, fuck that. So you have to give credit where credit is due, which means that the Tea Party Republicans, take your hat off, man, because they were right on this and they did the right thing here. I mean, they voted the right way for the wrong reasons, but nonetheless, you still give them credit. And the progressive Democrats, Nancy Pelosi at the last second flipped. And she said, you know what? I'm against this. So hell of a lot of credit to her. And only 40 Democrats voted for it in the House, which is tremendous. That means the overwhelming majority voted against it, which shows you that, you know, when you get further away from the Senate, you get closer to democracy. Like the Progressive Caucus obviously does a decent job. In the House of Representatives, they're slightly less corrupt than in the Senate. They are corrupt still, though, but the Senate is like even more corrupt. And this also reminds me how much better parliamentary systems are. Because in a parliamentary system, you basically, it's like having no Senate, essentially. And then, of course, it's prime minister instead of a president. But broadly speaking, you have representatives who are more like what our congressmen are here. And they are more representative than the Senate is. The Senate is where all good legislation goes to die, where the most corrupt people are. So 302 to 126, it was defeated. But, of course, here's the asterisk, here's the caveat. It's only temporary, dude. It's only temporary. Because there was some fighting over a provision which does work training for people who would lose their jobs as a result of this. I love how, like, they thought that that was good enough to appease the Democrats. The Republicans and Obama were like, throw in that provision where when you lose your job, you get some training afterwards. And they thought they'd be like, okay, Democrats, now you can vote for it. But a lot of the Democrats were like, how about we just don't lose any more jobs? How about we don't do the TPP? How about we don't do Fast Track? Now, they're going to fiddle around with the provisions more, and it's going to come back up for a vote. I think on Tuesday, one of the articles said it's going to come back up for a vote. It's not expected to pass then either, but understand I'm still on the fence as to whether or not, you know, in the long run it's dead. Because, you know, if you follow politics as long as I have, you kind of understand that the moneyed interests always find a way to regroup, always find a way to come back and attack. And people on our side usually get lackadaisical. And by the way, you have to give credit to the AFL-CIO. They're a fantastic union, and they really, really ramped up the pressure they put on Democratic congresspeople in the days leading up to this vote. And believe me, that had an effect. Like, we're all against money in politics. But while there is money in politics, you're damn fucking right. I want the most aggressive people to be the unions with spending money in politics. Because at least as far as the special interest groups go, they actually give a shit about workers. That's their whole point. You know what I mean? Believe me, I'd make a deal today to okay, no more corporate money in politics and no more union money. Let's do it right now. But while there is money in politics, yeah, I don't want to do, universal or unilateral disarmament where we say, okay, no problem. Only the bad guys spend. No, we should spend too. And the AFL-CIO did a good job here, stepping up and fighting and really applying pressure and basically letting the people in Congress know that, like, look, labor may be hurt and we may have declined over the years, but we're not done and we're not going down without a fight. So thankfully, at least for now, we've blocked what really would be the knife in the heart of the American middle class. I mean, we spoke about it time and time again on the show how, according to the Economic Policy Institute, we've already lost hundreds of thousands of jobs because of other free trade deals. And in some cases, like the normalization of trade relations with China, we've lost millions of jobs as a result of that. How about we stop doing this? And refuse to call it free trade. Don't call it free trade. Anytime anybody says free trade to you, anytime you read an article that mentions free trade, replace that word with outsourcing, because that's what it is. Other developing nations have lower costs of labor. So as a result of that, all of the jobs are going to go to the places where there's lower cost of labor. It's economics 101. That's what they're going to do. So it's either we need to drop our fucking prices or the cost of labor to be lower than Bangladesh, or they're going to send the fucking jobs to Bangladesh. So anytime you see free trade, take out that word and put in the word outsourcing, because that's what it is. So that's why I've argued for the longest time, man, I cannot believe that the word protectionism has a negative connotation nowadays. You know, like whenever people talk about protectionism, they're like, ugh, protectionism, gross. How did that get a negative connotation? And also, how did welfare get a negative connotation? Would you want to protect your kids? Okay, then why would protectionism, protecting the country, be a bad thing? Would you want to look out for the welfare of your kids? Yes, right? So why would the welfare of your neighbor be a bad thing? Somehow we live in this fucking Twilight Zone world where concepts that are good concepts like welfare and protectionism, it's like, okay, those are bad now. Why? Because politics has become so corporatized and they've done such an aggressive marketing job that now everybody just thinks that those things are bad even though they're good. Well, that's why shows like ours exist, because I'm one of the guys who's standing up and saying, no, I'm pro-welfare. Yes, I am. I'm on the side of welfare, and I'm also on the side of protectionism. Bring back tariffs. How about that? You guys know what a tariff is? Very few people do, because they don't teach it anymore, because if they did fucking teach it, then, you know, we'd have a way to get policies back that are good for the American middle class. Tariffs are, if we ship in goods from China, as we do all the fucking time, by the way, the idea is you put a tax on those goods so that if you're buying a cheap-ass T-shirt from China and, you know, they could sell it for like $5, right, you tax it to be like $13. And the reasoning behind it is if you made the same shirt in America, well, you know, the cost to produce that shirt here would be like $12 or $11. So you tax foreign goods to be about the same price as goods that are made in America, and this way you're incentivizing people to buy in America, and it's not a race to the bottom. So you'd, you know, sustain jobs in America if people are incentivized to buy things from America. And again, with the prices being slightly higher, you're actually boosting wages here at home. So it's a positive thing. It's not a negative thing, but people only view it now and talk about it now through the lens of the consumer. Like, oh, go to Walmart, get the cheapest shit you could possibly fucking get. And what people don't tell you is, because you're spending so little, you know who's making your crappy T-shirt with the poisonous dye in it, right? It's some kid in a fucking slave labor shop in China. Why would you want to support that? And why should the government sit by idly and let that exist? No, that's the whole reason government is there, to stop shit like that, and at least to make it so we're not actively participating in helping that system. This is why protectionism makes sense. This is why tariffs make sense. You know, I don't know about you guys, but if I have a choice of the same product, about the same price, and one is made in America and it's higher quality, and I'm supporting an American job when I buy that product, I'm going to buy American. But they make it so that, you know, it's so cheap when you buy from overseas, and that's one of the reasons why we've lost so many jobs here in America. All right, I'm dragging on here. I didn't plan to do an actual segment on this, but there you have it. TPP and Fast Track defeated, at least for today. But it's a zombie. It'll come back at some point, believe you me. All right, let's go to Ben Carson. And I believe, yes, I do. I have a clip for this. Ben Carson did an interview with CNN to discuss his presidential run and various political issues. And he basically got cranky on air, and he really gave a nasty attitude to a very legitimate question here about gay rights. Let's listen.
I want to get to these comments about gay rights and gay marriage that are in the spotlight again. Can you just clarify for us sort of where you stand on this issue? I know you're saying that, you know, gays haven't been segregated when it comes to, say, water fountains the way African Americans have been, but do you think that gay Americans are discriminated against, that they face discrimination?
I don't really want to talk about the gay issue, except maybe you can get the answer for this question. What position can a person take who has no animosity toward gay people but believes in the traditional definition of marriage that would be acceptable?
Well, sir, I mean, if you're running for president, I think it's fair to ask you this question. Part of being a candidate is to answer questions. Can you tell us if – I understand if you're saying it's not exactly the same, but people look at that, some people look at that, and they say we're talking about two groups that have faced discrimination. And I wonder if you think gay Americans face discrimination, even if it's not at water fountains.
I've made my opinion quite clear on this issue. I think the Constitution protects every single American, and everybody has equal rights. Nobody has extra rights.
Oh, extra rights.
Sure,
right.
But if you're saying it protects people from discrimination, I'm asking you then if you think gay Americans are protected from being discriminated against, and do they face discrimination? Do you think they do?
Everybody should be protected against discrimination.
Are they, and are gay Americans facing discrimination?
Can we move on to something more important?
You haven't answered my question. You haven't answered my question. Are gay Americans discriminated against? It's a very simple question. I'm just asking you to clarify your remarks.
I just said everybody needs to be protected from discrimination.
Okay.
Everybody probably has somebody who discriminates against them because they're people with small minds who think that way.
Like you.
So you're saying gay Americans are discriminated against?
I'm saying every group faces some type of discrimination. Christians face a lot of discrimination. I wish we would talk more about that.
Then, so do you not want to talk about discrimination against gay Americans?
I just gave you an answer.
Okay, I think you gave me part of an answer, but not a complete one.
Oh, that was so hard to watch. Dude, you're running for president. You have to be able to roll with the punches here, man. And like I was saying before, take a guy like President Obama. I have many, many issues with President Obama, and I've gone after him ruthlessly when I think he deserves it. But, I mean, he's, you know, a really good politician when it comes to answering questions and being slippery and being smooth. Whether he's talking to a right-wing asshole or he's talking to somebody who's a centrist establishment kind of person, or whether he's talking to a liberal, he finds a way to, like, you know, make them go, like, what just happened? He just I thought I was going after him, but he just answered things, you know, in a really smooth way that was straightforward and that makes you go, oh, I somehow agree with him, even though I may actually disagree with him. That was just hard to watch. Notice, he had to bring up Christian discrimination. I mean, every time somebody says that, the interviewer should automatically go, give me one example of Christian discrimination. Just one. And we saw this with Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. When she was asked that, her response was, yeah, there's that one time a lot of Christians are one example? Can I get back to you? She couldn't give one example. And I guarantee you, if you ask Ben Carson, he can't give you one either. You want to know why? It doesn't exist! That's why. But see, what they can say is, well, you aren't giving us the right to take away gays' rights. Therefore, you're discriminating against us. They try to flip it. So, you know, somebody could bring up, like, one of the Fox hosts brought up the Indiana discrimination law, anti-gay discrimination law. They're like, we're not allowed to kick gays out of our restaurant because they're gay? Well, that's discrimination against us. No, it's not. That's you discriminating against them, as you say that you're a victim, which is not the case. I also love the extra rights talking point. Because this is straight out of the Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh playbook. It's like, well, gays do have a right to get married. Hello? They just have to get married to somebody from the opposite sex. That's it. They think it's cute. They think it's clever. Like, aha, gotcha. Except they're attracted to people of the same sex. And if they get married to somebody of the same sex, they're not hurting anybody. And in reality, that would be equal protection under the law if you let them choose who they want to get married to when they're not hurting anybody else. But they think they nailed it when they're like, I just don't want to give them extra rights. And who doesn't love the, I have no animosity towards gays, I just don't want them getting married. Just take out gay, put in interracial marriage there, and you'll see how ridiculous it is. I'm not a racist or anything. I just don't want white people to get married to black people. So then you're a racist. I mean, it's amazing how they do these mental gymnastics where they can think that that makes sense. Like, I'm not anti-gay, I just want to take away their rights. Okay, so then what? You're calmly against them? Like, you're anti-gay, but you're not fervent about it or loud about it or a dick about it? You just calmly want to take away their rights. Well, I'm sure there were, you know, people in the old South who were pro-segregation who were like, I love black people. They just need to stay on their side of town and never look at a white person and understand that they're second-class citizens. Okay, well, that would be a racist. That would be a racist. Saying, you know, I'm not anti-gay, I'm just against gay rights. Well, then you are anti-gay. Of course you are. Again, the mental gymnastics is stunning. And then at the very beginning, can you clarify for us where you stand on gay rights? No. I don't want to talk about it. Dude, you're running for president. You can't say that. You can't say that. Could you imagine, man, on any other issue? Like, hey, so what's your position on the minimum wage? Next question. What the fuck? No, you want to be a leader. You want to be the president of the United States, the most powerful man in the country. Your whole job is, what are your opinions on these issues and what are you going to try to implement? He's like, fuck that. You know, tell me I was a great doctor or something. Suck up to me. Oh, God. It's just, you know what it is? It's these Republicans, they're just so unserious. I don't know how anybody could vote for them. I don't know how anybody could even think about voting for them. I mean, they're a parody of themselves, and this makes it clear. Okay, now. I got time for one more here before the first break. And let's do the Noam Chomsky story. Noam Chomsky spoke to WorldNet Daily, and he proposed a really interesting thought experiment that I want to discuss with you guys. Here he is talking about Obama's drone campaign and Obama's general position on civil liberties.
He's on his way, supposedly, to Runnymede on June 15th for a commemoration of Magna Carta. The principal element of Magna Carta was establishing a principle of presumption of innocence. A person is innocent until proven guilty in a fair trial with due process. The trial appears. Now, of course, it was very narrow 800 years ago, but it's expanded over the years. Obama's completely rescinded the drone assassination campaign officially. Designates people as guilty if the White House decides that they might someday want harm us. That's the official version of the drone assassination campaign. So it's a global assassination campaign which eliminates completely any conception of presumption of innocence. And I don't think it's the most remote justification for anything like this, quite apart from the fact that the people they kill they go way beyond even the suspect. Even going after the suspect is criminal. If any other country were doing this, say Iran, we'd consider it justification for a nuclear war.
So think about what he's saying there. He's proposing a very interesting experiment where he's saying, imagine for a second that another nation did with drones what we do with drones. So imagine you have Iran, or you don't even need to go to somebody who's like an enemy of ours. You can go to somebody, a country we're neutral with, or, you know, even a country that's somewhat our ally, but we're not gung-ho about being allies with them, like Britain or Israel, for example. So, you know, take, trying to think of a good example. Egypt. Let's say Egypt, run by Sisi, a guy who we pretty much like. Say he started doing a drone campaign where he would go into any country he wanted to go into, or China's another great example, a country like we're neutral with. So say China wanted to do a drone campaign. They fly their drones into any country they want. They don't, like, officially declare war. They don't go to the international community or anything like that. And they just start blowing shit up whenever they feel like it because they say that the people they're blowing up are bad guys. How would we respond to that? How would we respond if Russia was doing that? Somebody who we're really on shaky grounds with right now. If Russia starts, you know, flying drones, not just in Ukraine where they're actually fighting right now, but if they go to Poland or Belarus or something like that and they start blowing people up who they think are anti-Russian, how would we respond to that? No, I think Chomsky's 100% right that, you know, we would view that as a real violation of international law, a violation of the norms and the world order that we've put in place. And this is an action that's very aggressive and it merits a response that, you know, will come back at you with at least the same amount of force, but probably more. And I think he's right when he says if a country like Iran does it, oh, my God, we'd probably say to Israel, release the hounds of hell, or we'd consider a nuke. And here's why this is so frustrating. When we act in this way, nobody bats a fucking eyelash. In fact, you have liberals in America who are like, yeah, I don't see a problem with that. Like Obama said in the last State of the Union, he's like, the question isn't if America is going to lead in the world, it's how America is going to lead in the world. And then he goes on to explain, like, yeah, the all-out war thing like the neocons did, like in Iraq with George Bush and Dick Cheney, that was crazy. But what I'm in favor of is let's just fly our killer robots over the skies everywhere where we don't like people and kill people from time to time. That's like the more liberal idea. The more conservative idea is all-out war, invade, whatever, go crazy. The liberal idea is no ground invasion, but let's kill people with flying robots. So even liberals in America just take it for granted. They're like, okay, that's just what it is. This is just what we do. But what you're admitting to is, if you're on that page, is I do not apply the same standards to myself that I would apply to other people. So we would get outraged if Iran did it or China did it or Russia did it. We would say, oh, my God, this is a rogue nation, an aggressive nation breaking international law. But when we do it, it's sit down and shut up, and it's okay. You can't even question it. And it's the problem of what I call moral extrapolation. So any, you know, philosophical discussion about morality has to center around the idea that if it's bad for me, if it's bad for you, it's bad for me. Okay? It's just a moral principle. So if anybody does it, it's wrong. But America's like, fuck that. We're going to build in the double standards to the way we think. So in other words, we can do whatever the fuck we want to do, and it's okay because we're the good guys because I just said we're the good guys. So it's not, notice, you've gotten out of the paradigm and out of the spectrum of your actions define who you are. And you've gotten into the realm of, no, we're just going to slap labels on people. So America, good. Anybody who's not on our side, bad. And that's the way we look at it. You have to be able to universalize or generalize your moral compass and your moral code and say, it, you know, if somebody else does it and we think it's wrong, then we shouldn't do it either because it'd be equally as wrong if we do it. And plain there, the drone campaign flips the burden of proof, where ever since the Magna Carta days, the idea was innocent until proven guilty. The burden of proof is on the state. You know, your home is your castle. You know, that's where the government cannot be intrusive and just come in there and do whatever the fuck they want. And with the drone campaign, it's totally flipped, where, you know, they have kill lists. It's not like these people were, you know, the names or the people were brought in front of a judge and the judge said, yeah, guilty, go ahead, do whatever you want, kill them. No, they just kill them. They just say, we don't like these guys, we think they're guilty, we're going to kill them, and then they have to, other people would have to prove that they weren't guilty, we're just going to assume that they're guilty, so it's guilty until proven innocent. You know, they think males from age whatever it is, 16 to like 60 are terrorists. They just are terrorists because we say they're terrorists. And this is how you get to a situation where in Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia, we've killed so many civilians. I mean, we did stories about how we blew up wedding processions. I mean, that's horrendous shit, man. We blew up funerals of Taliban operatives when we knew women and children were there. And we said, fuck it. Who cares? We might get one Taliban guy or two Taliban guys and might kill 40 or 50 civilians, women, and children, blow them up anyway. We killed a grandmother picking vegetables in a field. And this is all because we decided, okay, burden of proof is flipped, and we're not going to treat them like they're humans, and let's just kill them, and let's say fuck it. And also, remember, what we're doing is not only wrong under international law, it's wrong under U.S. law. Because according to the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, you have to declare war in a country if you fight there. And the Congress needs to do it. Congress hasn't signed off on the drone war in Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia and in other places. They haven't done it. So we just, you know, we do drone strikes in these places. We kill people, and then we say, what do you mean? We're not at war with this country. I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean we're not at war with them? Again, if China started blowing up shit in Kentucky, would we say, it's all right, it's not a war, it's just a limited drone mission where they're blowing up some people who are sovereign citizens as terrorists? Whatever, man, forget about it, no big deal. Would we view that as an act of war? Of course we'd view it as an act of war, which brings me right back to my main point, which is that the idea is, unfortunately, and this is true for all imperialist nations that have ever existed throughout history, the idea is whatever we do is justifiable because it's right by definition, because we mean well, and because we're the good guys. So therefore, if we violate international law, if we violate the Constitution, if we do shit that we get mad at, if other nations do it, who gives a fuck? And this is why you have libertarians and you have progressives and many liberals in America who have said, enough, enough's enough, whether it's neocons like Bush and Cheney or so-called liberals like President Obama. We've fucking lost our way here, man. We need to get back to the Constitution. We need to get back to abiding by international law. We need to get back to acting within the law around the world. Because if we act like this, then guess what? We lost all moral authority. And when any other nation starts to act in a rogue way, who the fuck are we to tell them they can't do it when we actually started doing it first? Okay, let me take a break. When we come back, we're going to have to talk about a marijuana shop that basically got robbed by police. Very scary story. And the ex-gay therapy case is bonkers, son. You don't want to miss that either. That's crazy. All right, stay right there. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back.
Away, try again another day. I should be happy, not tipping the scale. I just won't play, letting my life get away. I'm a fooler, I'm a fooler. I don't take things as they come if they break me down. I can be cruel if you're a dreamer. I just wanna have some fun. If you want to train me like an animal, better keep your eye on my every move. There's no need to be so damn cruel. Maybe you've got nothing to prove. I'm a fooler, I'm not a follower. I don't take things as they come if they bring me down. I can be cruel if you're a dreamer. I just wanna have some fun. Don't tell me what could be done. You know you like your body talking like me.
Dump, 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 dump
Of a bitch. All right, guys. We are back. All right, let's get into a really scary story here about weed. The investigative news agency Voice of OC did some great work getting their hands on some surveillance footage of a marijuana shop bust. It shows Santa Ana police raiding the Sky High Holistic Dispensary, and they're basically acting like criminals. That's the best way to describe it. They say it was an illegal marijuana dispensary. Now, we'll get more into that later. I'm going to show you part of their video here. I urge you to watch the full video. It has much more stuff in there. I'll leave the link in the description box, but let's go ahead and watch a clip here. All right, so for everybody listening live, they're using one of those battering rams to break down the door. That even looks unnecessary. Like, it looks like they didn't even need to do that. They're forcing people to get on the ground when it's all, like, peaceful people there standing looking at the product. Now there's a woman with an amputated leg who was there getting medicine.
I was a little allergic, but everything's fine now.
Did you punch that one leg?
I was about to kick her in her fucking knob.
Joking about kicking the amputee in the leg.
I was about to kick her in her fucking knob.
Is that why you were getting irritated?
Now the officers are,
Is this what we're doing here?
They're pulling down cameras and breaking cameras. At the end there, they were eating edibles. They raid the marijuana shop, and then they actually take the drugs. They raid the marijuana shop because drugs are bad and illegal, and then they do the drugs. Remind me again how this system makes sense? At least two of them did edibles, and they were just casually, you know, nonchalantly talking about it. Later on, they show another one of these guys, the bigger guy who looks like he's on steroids. He's eating like a bar. Now, that one, they say, well, we actually don't know if that guy was actually eating a protein bar or if it was an edible. But at least two of them did eat edibles. You know, when you watch that, it just becomes obvious that they are the criminals. They're the criminals there. Guys, I don't know how that would have been any different if it was an actual robbery. You know, like, okay, let's walk through this. So at the beginning, they break down the door. Why? Why are you breaking down the door? Now understand, they were open. It was a normal day. They were open for business. There were already a bunch of people in there just casually shopping, looking at the products. But they fucking break down the door with a battering ram. Why? Why would you do that? They do that, okay, already unnecessary. You could have just walked in. And then they come in guns drawn already. And they're like, get on the ground, get on the ground. Again. Why? they're just standing there. People are just standing there shopping, doing nothing. It's like if you went into any medical marijuana shop in California. People are just shopping the same they would as if they were in a liquor store, for example. So they force everybody to the ground. That was unnecessary as well, in my opinion. Then they joke about it. A fucking amputee lady, they're like, they're joking about, I wanted to kick her in her nub. Also, by the way, let's pause and reflect on the fact that there was an amputee there to buy marijuana, which kind of shows that it actually is a marijuana dispensary that's for medicinal purposes. Now, I'm sure some people go in there for recreational shit, but who gives a fuck? But at least for that woman, for sure, let's say they blocked her sale. Well, what if she ran out of weed and she's in fucking pain later on that day? Again, who are the criminals? Remind me again who the criminals are. And then they're breaking the cameras. I mean, that, again, pound the gavel, son. It's over. Who are the criminals here? Isn't that destruction of evidence? Isn't that obviously not the proper protocol? Isn't that not what you're supposed to do? I mean, if you were doing this in a legitimate way, aren't you supposed to take that and then bring it, to the police department, and then you put it in evidence and stuff like that? And then, I mean, a lot of times, unfortunately, what they do is civil asset forfeiture, and then they take it and they use it themselves, or they take money and they use the money to fund their own police departments. Guys, look, we've legalized a class of people, officers, law enforcement, to shake down society whenever they fucking feel like it. That's what the drug war has led to. Look, I mean, I don't know, when you see that, I don't know if there's anybody who can defend this and can say it's a good thing that marijuana is still illegal at a federal level. And again, that wasn't even, this was a Santa Ana Police Department, so this wasn't even federal agents cracking down. This was, they were local, And what that shows me is, they are just doing shakedowns, because, again, they said it was an illegal marijuana dispensary. You know what my response to that is? So, illegal how? Give me more detail on that. And even if you do give me more detail on that, you know how you address the illegality of the place? You tell them, hey, man, go get your permit. That's it. That's it. That's all you have to do. You know, worst case scenario, what do? Oh, if you're running it in an illegal way, here, I'm gonna write you a ticket. Because medical marijuana is legal in California. That's what they're doing. He's got a dispensary just like all the other dispensaries. So for some weird reason, they're saying it's illegal. Very vague. I don't know why they're saying it's illegal. But even if it was illegal, you don't do what the fuck you just did right there. But that's the point, man. They're criminals. These police officers are criminals. What they did is a robbery right there. That's what they did. Armed robbery right there. They scared the shit out of a bunch of innocent people minding their business, just living their lives, going about their day. Could you imagine a coffee shop was treated like that? Caffeine's a drug. You do know that, right? Can you imagine somebody busts into Starbucks, tells people to get on the, breaks the door for no reason, tells people to get on the ground while pointing guns at them, they destroy the security cameras, and they start drinking the coffee themselves. As they say to you, it's illegal for you to drink coffee, I'm going to take your business because of that. It's just absolutely drenched in hypocrisy, and it's drenched in stupidity. And the drug war itself is a complete failure. We know this. The idea going into the drug war was limit or eliminate people taking drugs. Well, guess what, tough guys? There's more people taking drugs today than there was when you started the fucking drug war. Not to mention, now there are gigantic criminal enterprises that are making money nonstop as a result of this. You made the drug cartel stronger because of the drug war, you idiots. That's what happened during Prohibition. How do you think the mafia got so powerful? Because you banned alcohol, so obviously the criminal organizations fill that void in the marketplace. They make all the money. They have a monopoly. And now you have the mafia incredibly powerful and incredibly rich. Well, now, why do you think we have the mega drug cartels now in Mexico that are so vicious they take on the army in Mexico? Because we created that monster with our dumbass policies. The least we can do is decriminalize marijuana on a federal level and stop people at a state and local level from doing shit like this. But what we really should do is legalize it, man. You wouldn't want to do a shakedown of a coffee shop. You wouldn't want to do a shakedown of a liquor store. Why the fuck would you want to do a shakedown of a marijuana shop? We all just casually bought into the double standard and the hypocrisy that we have in our society where some drugs are legal and some drugs are illegal. But it doesn't make any fucking sense. There's no reason to morally judge somebody who smokes weed, but you give the guy who drinks whiskey a total pass. It doesn't make any sense. You're being irrational if that's how you look at it. But then again, clearly rationality isn't the point and justice isn't the point, because if it was the point, you would not have the officers being robbers themselves. All right, now, let's move on to a really important issue regarding abortion. There was an absolutely disastrous decision handed down from a federal appeals court in Texas this week on the issue of abortion. Think Progress reports, Texas may implement a sweeping anti-abortion law known as HB2 that threatens to shutter dozens of clinics. Among other things, HB2 will force clinics to make expensive upgrades to bring their buildings in line with standards for ambulatory surgical centers. Under this particular portion of the law, all abortion providers in the state will need to implement costly renovations on their buildings, like widening their hallways, building janitor's closets, and installing sophisticated air filtration systems to make their facilities more analogous to a hospital than a doctor's office. Now, let's pause here, because if somebody doesn't know any better and they hear that, they might say, well, that's a good thing. I thought liberals were in favor of smart regulation. That sounds like smart regulations. To try to make an abortion clinic more like a hospital? Yeah, I mean, what could be wrong with that? You're just trying to up, you know, the sanitation standards, the cleanliness. You're trying to up how professional it is. What's the issue? Well, I'll tell you what the issue is. Quote, abortion law applies even for the provision of medication abortion, the non-surgical method of ending an early pregnancy that involves taking two rounds of pills. In practice, this means that the state of Texas will require abortion clinics to make hospital-style upgrades to their buildings to legally allow their patients to swallow pills. So do you understand that? At this court proceeding, they were told, okay, this law is way too broad, way too wide, and it doesn't make sense because we have a lot of so-called abortion clinics where you just get the pills for really early abortions. And the judge was like, I don't care. If the law says you need to have a surgical center, even though you don't do physical abortions there, then you have to have it. It doesn't matter that it's totally unnecessary. So understand what's going on here. We've spoken about this before. That's the whole point. See, some people might look at this and say, oh, well, what a clunky law. Looks like they messed up here passing this. No, that was the point. These are called trap laws. Targeted restriction of abortion procedures is what they're called. They were devised by the Christian right a few years back, and the idea was, I know what we'll do. We'll exploit people wanting to have good regulation, and we'll purposefully over-regulate to the point where we regulate these clinics out of existence. So all the smaller clinics can't afford to fucking pay for this. And again, some you just go and take a pill, and they don't even need it, nor can they afford it. But they're saying it doesn't matter. You have to do it. We've spoken about this, man. We've covered stories in other states where you have conservative lawmakers go into an abortion clinic, take out a tape measure. They'll measure the length of the walls and the height of the walls, and they'll go, okay, what we got here? Your ceilings are 14 feet high. That's weird. We're about to pass a regulation that says it needs to be 15 feet high in order for you to stay in business. You have to renovate your whole building. It's going to cost you at least $1 million. Have fun with that. See ya. Then they walk out. Again, what's the point? The point is, they want to regulate them out of business. This is coming from the people who always scream about over-regulation and red tape. Here they're saying, no, that's the whole point because we don't like abortion, so we're trying in a backdoor way to ban it, to outlaw it completely. See, notice, when conservatives and Republicans can't win in an actual debate, in a real discussion on a policy matter, they just cheat. That's what they do. They say, we'll exploit people who think that there needs to be more regulation at these different abortion clinics into thinking it's the right thing to do to regulate them out of existence. It's so gross because they have to do it in the sleazy way, and they have to do it in the backdoor way in order to win on the issue, even though they still didn't actually win on the issue. They're just cheating to win on the issue. So they also say some abortion providers have estimated that these renovations will cost them upwards of $1 million. Many of them can't afford that. And the final twist of irony in this is, think about what the effects will be. So you're telling places where they just give out the pills to end an early pregnancy, you're telling them that they need to go out of business now. Think about what you just did. You made it so now, instead of safely terminating an early pregnancy with pills, now you've made it so that person is going to take more time to have to travel somewhere else to get a surgical abortion. So these guys always, you know, okay, we're against abortion, but yes, if it's going to happen, you should happen early and not later. Obviously, early is better than a late-term abortion. Well, you jackasses just made it so that there's going to be more late-term abortions now. There's going to be more later abortions now. Because you just said the safer, earlier forms of the pills where you terminate a pregnancy earlier, we're not going to allow that. So now you're forcing people into going, into having to wait longer, or in some cases even going to the black market where it's really not safe and where women end up dying. You see, this is why we say there's a war on women. Because there is. All right, let me go to Glenn Beck here. Glenn Beck is continuing his quest of trying to find guests that are even dumber than him, and he may have succeeded today. So Right Wing Watch has some great video of the conservative rabbi Daniel Lapin, or Lapin, talking about women and their periods. Oh, boy.
Something that's required in the Torah, and I mean, this is something I recommend literally for absolutely every married couple. It's a commandment only for Jews, but that is that marital intimacy is suspended once a month for a period of time. And I mean, obviously, it's difficult, particularly for guys, obviously, but to be forced to interact with your wife non-physically for a week is really very valuable. To be in a situation where not every issue can be resolved with an arm around the shoulder and a kiss, but it needs to be resolved with words, communication is enormously valuable. And why is this there? Well, because anybody with any sensitivity recognizes that the good Lord created men with an infinite capacity to produce seed at almost any age, whereas he chose to create women with an absolute finite, limited number of eggs. And so the loss of an egg every month for any sensitive woman is sad because it's one less opportunity for life. And so foolish and insensitive people say, oh, you know, it's just a hormonal imbalance. It isn't. It's a genuine, authentic sadness which suffuses any sensitive woman at the loss of an egg. I mean, it's not the end of the world, but it's sad. And
well,
so
I've never thought of it that way, that it is actually a God-given sadness.
I wonder what women are thinking when they watch that, what biologists are thinking when they watch that, scientists, doctors, they're probably like, oh my God, stop talking. I'll just stop talking, He's like, you know, women, when they get their period, they're not feeling bad because of hormonal imbalances or anything like that. It's because they lost a life. They lost an egg and that's a life. You know, Bill Maher has a joke about this. He says that the conservatives are getting so ridiculous on the issue of abortion that some of them believe that life begins before conception. Okay, this guy might actually be in that group. So wait, by the same logic here, if you apply it to men, he's saying, well, women are upset because it's like they're losing a life when they lose an egg. Okay, well, by the same logic, then every time guys masturbate, shouldn't we be really sad and be in pain? Because we lose a lot of fucking lives when we do that. I don't know how many sperm are in a normal ejaculation, but shouldn't we be upset by the same logic? I got news for everybody, man. I feel fantastic after an orgasm. I'm sure you do too. So I'm not sure your theory makes much sense. And if women are, you know, losing an egg, it's so precious, it's like losing a life, then should we lock them up? Isn't that like criminal? If you're saying, hey, the blood, come on, guys, it's an egg, it's a chance for life, it's so, that's why they're so upset, well, then, you know, by your own logic, you guys are, I'm pro-life. Well, she just lost a life. So would you want to lock them up? And also, if God's design is perfect, as these guys tell us all the time, then why did he make women lose their egg bleeding every month and be in pain? They can't answer this shit. Of course they can't, because they haven't logically thought about it. He's a religious dingbat who's working backwards from his conclusion. And by the way, the Old Testament says, in the Old Testament, I should say, God says that your wife needs to not sleep under the same roof as you when she's on her period and you can't even touch her. So that's my question for this guy. Do you make your wife sleep outside when she's on her period? Because if you don't, you're violating God's law. And, I mean, we know what the punishment for that is. God's kind of a dick in the Old Testament. So get on that, dude. What's going on here? And also, you seem to have shaved your face and your hair. And you do know that's an abomination in the eyes of God, too, right? So I don't know, why are you not abiding by that? Again, that's in the Old Testament as well. The Torah is the Old Testament. What's up, man? Why are you spitting in God's eye? I'm so sick and tired of ultra-conservatives and religious fundamentalists, because there's just zero logic to what they say, and they're still insisting that we should take them seriously, you know? Like, you would think that you wouldn't think somebody like Glenn Beck would do this, but in any sane world, the person you would talk to about women's issues like that, maybe number one would be a woman, but number two, a scientist, a biologist, something like that, somebody like that, because that, you know, that would make sense. Those people would actually know why a woman is upset during that time of the month. And maybe it has something to do with the fact that they're just fucking bleeding out of their genitals. I think I would cry, too, if my dick started crying every month. I mean, if it was bleeding, the things that they're willing to say, the lengths they're willing to go to push their religious dogma on us, it's disgusting, it's grotesque, and it's time for everybody to stand up and say, this isn't just an equal and opposite opinion. This is somebody who makes no sense and should be mocked, and we should do nothing but heap scorn on them if they take part in the national conversation. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I got a whole bunch of stuff I got to get to before we end the show. The ex-gay story is stunning, man. Yeah, when you see what these guys are doing in so-called ex-gay therapy, woo, it's even worse than I thought. Like, before I just thought, well, it doesn't work. Well, now I think there's a purpose behind it that is nefarious. And then also, later on, porn in space. The fuck is that about? All right, stay right there. We'll be right back.
And we'll all slow down anyway. We're a sexual magazine.
All right, guys, we're back, and this next story is really, really important. A lot of people should be talking about this. Unfortunately, not too many are. So there's a big court case going on right now in New Jersey on the issue of so-called ex-gay therapy. And the testimony is fucking bonkers. So I'd go as far as to say now that not only does ex-gay therapy not work, which of course we already knew, but it's specifically for creepers to take advantage of people who are confused sexually. That may sound like a strong statement, but as I give you some of the information here, I think it'll sway you. So let me give you some of the treatments they used. First and foremost, a victim described in the court case stripping while staring at himself in the mirror. This is a treatment. With his counselor close behind him, so close that he can, quote, feel his breath down his neck. Now, your thought process is probably the same as mine was when I first read this. Okay, how do they even pretend like that's a treatment? Well, they say it's in order for you to feel your own masculinity. And then if you feel your masculinity, you're going to go, ah, now I want to fuck the opposite sex. I'm not gay anymore. Think about how ridiculous that is. Look at yourself in the mirror with your shirt off and your pants off just to see that you're a man so you can go, I am a man! Now I want to fuck women. Is it becoming clear exactly what this is really for? The fucking creeper counselors who want to take advantage of people? Okay, as if that's not enough. Another practice is called holding. Here's how it's described. It's described as, quote, a series of cuddling exercises that take place between different clients and between clients and counselors. The goal is for men to learn how to touch other men without it being sexual. So this holding is intended to replicate non-sexual intimacy. Whoa. See, that one, what they're trying to do is say, oh, it's counterintuitive. What you do is you sit next to a man and you cuddle with a man. And as you do it, you think about how this is not sexual, I am not turned on. Where do I begin with this? Can it be any more obvious what the counselors are doing? Like, okay, come cuddle with me. And then when you cuddle with me, we'll not think about sexual shit. It's so brazen and it's so in your face that it's hard for me to even fathom and wrap my mind around the fact that this ever started up in the first place, that anybody ever even had the balls to pretend like this was some sort of therapy. And I don't know how everybody who's ever been to ex-gay therapy didn't immediately walk out and say, oh my God, what the fuck is going on here? They want to cuddle with the guy, and they say, see, it's not intimate. By the way, take that to his logical conclusion. Why would they stop there, right? Oh, I'm just getting intimate with a guy and thinking about not being intimate with the guy while I'm getting intimate with a guy. So why not blow him and say the same thing? See, this exercise is for you to do a sex act on a male and understand that you're not doing it because you're sexually attracted to the male. You're just doing it while thinking about non-intimate things, which is going to make you stronger and make you not be gay anymore. This is, again, it's like out of a movie or something. This was happening in 2015. It's still happening now in many places. Now there's the case that's happening about it and everything, but this is something, sweet Jesus, this needs to be, you know, banned, or they have to give warnings that just make absolutely clear this is not real. You're not actually going to stop yourself from being gay. Think about ex-gay therapy. The idea of ex-gay therapy is I'm going to stop myself from being the sexuality that I am. That's as ridiculous as you or me, whatever sexuality you are, trying to change that. So as a straight guy, that's like me waking up tomorrow and trying to pretend like I'm not interested in women who have nice curves and a nice voluptuous ass. Not possible. It's not possible. Until the day I die, if I see a girl with curves and a nice ass, I will be like, my monkey brain takes over and I just want to, you know, like, oh, it's so nice. No, I got it, so I just want to look at it and I wanna, let me go talk to her or something, right? they try to make it seem like it's possible to, like, work that out of your head. You know what you're into sexually. You know what you're into sexually. You know what your weird things are, your fetishes are, whatever. They try to say to you, no, we can get that out of you. Just go cuddle with a guy. Then we have a description of another tactic here. This is a first-hand account. A client said, quote, "It was Saturday night and we were in a room. Someone came into the room and started handing out garbage bags and said that this next process is going to be done without clothes on. So we took our clothes off." Funny how all these are like naked. "And then they blindfolded us and we were instructed to link arms. And we walked through the woods into another room. Once we got into the room, we were able to take our blindfolds off and there was a bunch of people standing around. There were candles on a table and I think they called it an initiation ceremony. There was people dancing and there was a lot going on. Everyone was naked, including the counselors. Game, set, match. Could I fucking pound the gavel now? This is over, right? Do I even need to continue?" But believe it or not, I saved the most brazen one for last year. You're probably thinking, that's as brazen as it fucking gets. Get naked and, oh, look, you took the blindfold off. We're all naked. What do you guys want to do now? You want to touch mine and then I'll touch yours? Wait. Here it comes. The most brazen one of all. One of the treatments involved stripping down for your counselor in a private room, just you two, stripping down, getting naked, and the counselor watches you and says, "Touch your dick, and touch your, and also touch your ass for me." Again, I don't. How are they even pretending that that helps? No, see, the way you get the gayness out of you is that if you do the gay stuff in front of me, then you'll. Fuck it, I don't even try to hide it anymore. Okay, just show me your dick. These counselors are fucking, they're predators. These counselors are sexual deviants. They're molesters. They're harassing people, okay? They're taking advantage of these poor guys who, they're confused sexually. They are gay, but they don't want to be gay. They don't want to accept it, and they're trying to fight it, and the counselors are just, you know, using this as an example, or as an excuse, I should say, to get their rocks off. That's what this is all about. And by the way, the reasoning they really give is, again, it goes back to masculinity. Prove your masculinity to me, the counselor, by touching your dick in front of me and touching your ass. And when you do that, what, not wanting to immediately fuck? I don't even know what they're getting at. I don't even know what they're getting at. They just make it up. They make it up. You know, the only thing they haven't done yet, and maybe even this happened, is just they said to some guy, all right, fuck it, just blow me. Blow me. Blow me so you're not gay anymore as you're doing a gay sex act. If the court doesn't rule the right way, there's no hope for justice anywhere in the world or for common sense or rationality or logic anywhere. We might as well, you know, the humans tried, we gave it our best shot, but it's over. Let's stop pretending like we're intelligent. Let's, you know, just wrap it up. We're done. All right, now, let's go to, how many I got left here? I got a lot left, actually. Let's talk about God. A California State Assemblywoman named Shannon Grove is quite concerned about the drought in her state, and we've covered the drought in great detail recently. It's even led to water restrictions at this point, so you know it's really, really serious. The pictures are out of this world, man. It's like there were areas that there were tremendous bodies of water, and then now those bodies of water are gone. It's a really scary thing to see. But Shannon has her own solution to the crisis that she wants to share with us. She said, quote, "Texas was in a long period of drought until Governor Perry signed the fetal pain bill, and it rained that night. Now God has his hold on California." Blaming the drought on the fact that there are abortion rights in California. She's saying if you do an anti-abortion law here, God will get rid of our drought for us. Okay. It really scares me how irrational some people can be. It really does. And this, of course, it reminds me of directly after 9/11, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson yucking it up and talking about how they blame liberals for it. They blame liberals and gay pride parades for 9/11. And also, I think it was after Katrina, too. They'd be like, oh, there was a gay pride parade in that happened just before the hurricane. Hello? That's obviously why it happened. Are you kidding me? Do you have causation, correlation, you idiots! Do you have any idea how many things, you know, we can point to? How many times was there some Bible gathering with crazy Pentecostal Christians talking in tongues, and the next thing you know, a week later, there was a tornado in the similar place where it happened in the same state? Do we go, see, clearly Christianity is wrong. Well, I do say Christianity is wrong. But clearly there's a link between the Pentecostal idiots and the tornado. Duh. No, we don't say that because we're not morons. But see, the thing is, people like this, they can't break free from their ideological dogma. So they always have to superimpose it onto any situation. So people who are not religious and people who are more liberal, they look at something and they look at the evidence, they look at the data, they try to view things in an empirical way. But people like this, she only thinks through the lens of Jesus, Christianity, Bible. She only thinks through the lens of, you know, right-wing dogma. So therefore, just pick from your cadre of choices. Who do I blame today? Do I blame transgender people? Should I blame them today? Should I blame the liberals today? Should I blame the gays today? I know, I'll blame abortion today for something bad that happens. But any smart person is going to see right through your horseshit. See, they can't make an intellectual argument for an anti-abortion position, so they just try to make it so that, you know, it's a lockdown thing. Like, abortion is leading to the drought, so we have to stop it, you guys. Seriously, stop it now. It's leading to the drought. And in her mind, she thinks people will be like, oh my God, yes, get rid of it. Get rid of abortion. No, we look at it and we go, you idiot, that's not true. And you can't even provide a decent argument to be against abortion outside of that, so that's why you're doing that. You know, if they could come forth, if they had science on their side, they could come forth and say, you know, let me talk to you a little bit about zygotes and gametes. Let me talk to you about at what time the nervous system develops and this and that. And they, you know, they say, according to Dr. blah, blah, blah from Columbia, they can't do it. They can't do it. Why can't they do it? Because they're not intelligent enough. They don't want to do the research. They don't want to do the hard work. They don't want to base their views on what's actually happening in the world. So what do? God. The Trump card. That's what it is. It's laziness is what it is, too. It's intellectual laziness. When you don't learn, you don't read shit, you don't educate yourself, then when you get into some sort of political debate, what do you have to do? God! God! You know, we know other people who do that, too. The Taliban is very fond of that trick. Remember, there was a fundamentalist Muslim politician in Pakistan who blamed earthquakes on women wearing pants. He said, the way that the genes hug their body, it's very offensive to God, because what they're doing is they're being earthly, and they care about their flesh, and they're being sexual. God doesn't like that. So that's why God has brought earthquakes to us, because of the women and their goddamn genes. This is no fucking different. This is no fucking different. Abortion! Abortion is why we're having a drought. And by the way, is it even true that Rick Perry... when he did that, the rain came immediately? Of course not! That's absolutely not true! You think this is the kind of person who would tell the truth? It probably rained like 4 weeks later, and she's like, it had something to do with the new abortion law. No, it didn't. I almost want to, / I don't want to, but if we could have some sort of experiment where we prove that she's wrong to her face, we say, okay, let's do this. Boom, for a week, abortion's gone, no rain, and then she's like, rats. Except she won't give up. She'll be like, no, you got to wait longer. Because it's not, everything in their mind is a non-falsifiable claim. She doesn't view it as something you could disprove, because she doesn't give a fuck about proof. She doesn't give a fuck about truth. To her, it's just, I will say shit, I will have verbal diarrhea, and you can't challenge it because God. You can't even argue with people like that. All right, next. Oh boy. I was waiting to talk about this one for sure. So I have an update for you guys. This is from the International Business Times. It's about the issue of sucking baby dicks. Yeah, I'm not kidding. So, of course, I'm referring to the traditional ultra-Orthodox Jewish ceremony of circumcising a baby and then sucking off the bloody foreskin. This is real. This is real. Don't believe me. Google it as I'm talking here, okay? It turns out New York City is back to debating a compromise on this practice. So IBT says, quote, officials from the city's Board of Health agreed this week to open a public discussion about a proposal that would rescind a rule requiring consent forms for the procedure in what has been an attempt by Mayor Bill de Blasio to balance public health prerogatives with concerns about freedom of religion. So understand what they're saying there. They had consent forms for this, and now they're getting rid of it. They're like, oh, this was overregulation. This was the state was too big, too involved. This was something that got in the way of sucking the bloody baby dicks. So let's get rid of the forms and just let them, the wild, wild west of sucking baby dicks. That's what it is now. I got more on this. They say de Blasio had pledged to rescind the consent regulation during his mayoral campaign. And members of his administration have spent months in talks with ultra-Orthodox leaders on a suitable compromise. Again, think about how ridiculous that is. We're having a debate, we're having a discussion, we're trying to find the middle ground on sucking bloody baby dicks. More than 3,000 babies are circumcised each year in New York using this method. And since 2000, at least 17 cases of infant herpes have happened, and there were two deaths as a result of this. Now, here's my favorite part, a comment from an ultra-Orthodox Jewish leader on this. Quote, it is to Mayor Bill de Blasio's eternal credit that he recognized how profoundly offensive the regulation was to our community. Religion has gotten people to believe and say, utter out loud to the public, that it is offensive that you dare try to even minorly regulate the practice of cutting off the tips of baby dicks and sucking off the foreskin with blood. It's offensive that you would question them and not even ban it. Have minor regulations like a form that has some health concerns on it. It's offensive that you do that. You know what I find slightly more offensive? Cutting off baby dicks, sucking the foreskin and the blood. That's more offensive. That's significantly more offensive. And if people weren't blinded by the stupidity of religion, they would go, what the fuck are we thinking? Imagine for just a second for me, for just a second, there was some secular person, so he did this in no way attached to religion, and what he would do is he would cut off the tips of baby dicks and suck the bloody foreskins off. And this wasn't for any ceremonial reasons, any traditional reasons, any religious reasons whatsoever. It's just something that a really creepy guy liked to do. Would we say, it's Ted. Ted's just good doing his hobby. Who cares, man? The government offended me when they tried to make Ted fill out a form or they tried to make the parents fill out a form notifying them of the health damages of Ted mutilating their baby's dick and sucking off the blood in the foreskin. I'm offended that the government got involved in Ted's hobby in such an incredible way. Why the fuck, if a secular person does it, you know, it's the most outrageous thing ever, but if you do it in the name of a religion in a fundamentalist way, people are like, yeah, I don't see the problem. In fact, I'm offended that you try to even regulate it. You know what I would do if I was mayor? Ban it on day one. Day one, son. And then everybody would go, he's cracking down on our religion. He's against religious liberty. Yeah, that's religious liberty. You have the religious liberty to suck baby dicks. What else do you have the religious liberty to do? Rape people with metal pipes? How about that? Do you have the religious liberty to murder people? Can you sacrifice a goat in the middle of Times Square and spray the blood everywhere? Spray them on people walking by? Do you have that? Can you do that in the name of religious liberty? Can you stop people from getting vaccinated in the name of religious liberty? People would cry, like, oh, he's anti-religion. He's taking away our liberty to suck baby dicks. Ah! you know, guaranteed, anti-Semite. You're an anti-Semite because you're against sucking bloody baby dick foreskins. That's what you are. Okay, man. You know what it is? I'm going to pull a FDR right now. If you're against me on this, I welcome your hatred. I bathe in your hatred, and me bathing in your hatred is fine because that's totally better than you bathing in blood from a baby's dick. And we did just break the Guinness Book of World Records for saying baby dicks. All right, running out of time. Let me squeeze in two more here. I might be able to get in. Interesting article on Think Progress about sex education, and I can officially say that I've been outlived. Significantly so, too. So here in the U.S., we obviously have an insane debate about whether or not to do abstinence education or actual sex education. Well, in Denmark, the debate is now do real sex education or show porn in class. So let me be clear about in the U.S., I obviously despise the crazy religious right-wing idiots who want to do abstinence. Abstinence doesn't work. Every study has shown that, and it makes sense to do real sex education. I'm clear about that. I'm on the record about that. Now, when it comes to the porn idea, I'm not so sure I'm on board. So I don't want to be flippant about this. Let me give you their argument, and then I'll respond. So Christian Graugard, I could be mispronouncing that, and I apologize if I am, a professor of sexology at Aalborg University in Denmark, says the following, quote, "Traditional sex education classes are boring and technical, where you roll a condom onto a cucumber. Readily available clips have replaced mature, forward-thinking adults. Pornography or even erotic literature is an excellent vehicle for critical discussion about the difference between fantasy and reality and the commercial media's expression of sexuality, gender roles, and body types." So he's saying, yeah, I don't see the problem. We should be able to play porn, you know, or we should play porn for our students in sex ed classes. Like I said, I've been outlived, and here's why. I'm a guy. I've been a guy my whole life. I know what it's like to be a young guy just coming into your own, starting to go through puberty or whatever, and the reaction that you have when you see a naked female body. I guarantee you, if the idea is, hey, this is more educational, but it's not more educational, because you cross the line from giving facts and information and data and doing education to just flat out making a lot of boys in the class really fucking horny. What, you really want all these young boys sitting around you with fucking peckerwoods just standing up in their pants? They're sitting there, they can't even listen to what the fuck you're saying because they're staring at some titties, they're staring at some girl's ass, and all they're thinking about is the things that any, you know, kid that age would think about when they're seeing a naked female body. It's just, I don't think it's practical, and I don't think it makes sense, and I don't think it's really educational. Don't get me wrong, man, I'm not handcuffing you, right? I'm not saying that you can't do some things that maybe some would consider crossing a line. And for a health class and for a sex ed class, you should openly discuss all the different aspects of anatomy. You should go into detail about it. You should give the facts. You should teach how to use condoms, what the pill is, you know, what your sex clinics are, etc. I'm on page with all that stuff. But once you get to let's show porn in class, you might think that, oh, now we're going to talk about the problem with the different views of gender roles involved in the sex and, you know, the commercial media's expression of sexuality. You might think you're getting into all that. You're having some intellectual discussion. But what's really happening is, guaranteed the guys, probably a lot of the women in the class too, are going to just look at it like, ooh, porn. And they're, you know, I know when my monkey brain would take over and I'd just be like, I cannot wait to get out of class and go see my girlfriend and try to get blown. I'm just being honest with you guys. I'm just keeping it real that there are limits to liberalism. When you're so open-minded that you're willing to entertain ideas that are actually pretty silly, like showing porn for educational purposes, it's a problem. It's not going to be educational. That's the point. Do whatever you want and give all the facts within the context of being educational, but once you start showing porn, people are not going to be thinking about education. And when you say, hey, the sex ed classes are boring, okay, then don't fucking be boring. Be better at your job. Teach the facts of sex without being boring and without showing blowjobs and anal and all types of sex like that in class. I just don't think it's a good policy. I guarantee you guys I'm going to get some shit for that, too. Watch. All right, now, let's go to, I got only enough time for one story, and I'm going to do porn in space. The website Pornhub is crowdfunding $3.4 million to shoot a porn in space. So Eva Lovia and Johnny Sins, such classic porn star names, are the porn stars who signed up for this, and they'll be 68 miles above Earth when they do it. And I have so many questions and so many thoughts about this. First of all, how much training are you guys going to have to go through before you can actually go up there? And are there going to be more accomplished astronauts with you? I hope so. How's it going to be filmed? Do we know how sex would even work in space? How does it work when you're in zero gravity like that? Is it going to feel the same when you blow a load? Does it just like float away? I love how I made up that noise. That's the noise for loads in space. When they do, imagine they try to do like, you know, a money shot where he's coming on her face and it can't reach her face. It just goes right up and she's waiting. She's like, oh, there it is. It's weird. And actually, I might take a position on this. Funny to use that phrase. That people might not agree with. I don't know why they think this is any better than just porn. Like I get the idea behind it. Like, oh, we're going to space. Nobody's ever been there. Oh, it's quiet. It's wild. It's crazy. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm looking at porn, I'm more focused on the fucking than the scenery around. You know, I've seen many porns in my life. Probably can't name even one of the times. You know what was in the surrounding scenery. I don't know if there was some fucking fake flowers in the corner. I don't know if you shot it in a doctor's office. I don't know if you did it in an airplane bathroom. I don't know. I don't, because I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at the fucking. So I just think it's a lot of fucking work for not that much payoff. You know? Like, don't get me wrong. A lot of people are going to watch it, of course, because it's porn. But it's not, is it really all that much better or all that much different from, you know, some scene where somebody's fucking somebody in a living room? I don't think so. And maybe I'm in the minority, and yeah, there is somewhat of a difference if it's like fucking in public versus in a private place. Yeah, there are differences in like what people like and what it feels like to watch porn or be involved in porn in different places, but it's not enough where it's worth $3.4 million. Like, I'm sorry, guys, but I'm not contributing to this. And I don't think the world is really going to shed a tear if we can't get the porn in space. To me, it's whatever. But hey, look, I'm not saying you should ban it. I'm not saying anything like that. Go ahead and do it, no problem. But I just don't think it's all that much more exciting than regular porn. Call me crazy. And also, I hope that these guys, you know, there's not, like, they kind of risking their lives whenever you do something like that, right? I mean, I don't know what the statistics are like, but it's a risk. All right, guys, I'm out of time. Love you to death. The week is over. We'll see you on Monday. Of course, upload a whole bunch of videos tomorrow from today's show if you guys want to hear it again. But that'll do it. All right, everybody, have a great night, and we'll see you back here next week. Peace.